Now, it's The Six with the Jeff Calkins Show.
All right, joined now by Andy Benoit. Andy Benoit, NFL analyst. Longtime NFL analyst on Twitter, at Andy_Benoit. He joins me now. So is it, do we now believe that Jarrett Stidham is going to be the answer for the New England Patriots at quarterback?
It's possible. We'll see. I know this, or at least I'm very confident in this. I guess he hasn't told me this technically, but Bill Belichick is going to want a quarterback that runs the plays as they're designed. He's not going to want a lot of guesswork there. He's not going to want you coloring outside the lines, because those guys in New England, McDaniels, Belichick, they believe that they can win games if the players execute what they want to do. They'll tell you players win games, and they're right about that. But we're going to give the players a plan, and if the players follow that plan, we're going to win. And it's more important at any position than other for a guy to follow the plan. So they went out and got a known entity in Brian Hoyer, a guy they've worked with a lot before in the past. I think he's the favorite for the job right here, right now. But if they feel Stidham can play on schedule and they trust him, they'll obviously lean that way because he's the younger guy.
Was there not a quarterback, like, for example, my beloved Buffalo Bills picked Jake Fromm in the fifth round. Is he not a quarterback who would follow the plan? I guess, are you surprised that New England had a whole bunch of picks, didn't pick a quarterback?
No, I'm not surprised about that, because I think when Belichick said it just didn't break that way, or however he worded it, I think he was being honest there. Keep in mind, there's probably not going to be an offseason this year. So you're not going to be able to even practice with these guys. New England's scheme is not simple. There's a lot of option routes. A lot of the routes take place. You don't even know where the guy is running the route until you read the defense after the snap. That's a lot for a quarterback to process. They do a lot of motions and pre-snap shifting. They want to still be able to do all that. They can't do that with a rookie quarterback, most likely, especially not in a year where there's no offseason. Now, if there was one they thought was an absolute stud and he can be a great guy for the next 10 years and we'll just live with not having him be a big factor this year, maybe they would have done that. But there weren't any prospects in this draft that answered that call, at least not where the Patriots were picking. Maybe Jordan Love, but somebody beat them to Jordan Love.
Last question on New England, and this is not specifically draft. Obviously, people are watching this Jordan documentary now, and Jerry Krause is the whole organization is bigger than the players thing. NBA is different than the NFL, obviously, for all kinds of reasons. But is what Belichick is doing have that feel to it at all? Like I'm going to prove that the Patriots are bigger than Tom Brady, and I'm going to win with Brian Hoyer or Jarrett Stidham?
Absolutely, yeah. And Belichick's had that attitude for his entire time in New England. He is famous, maybe notorious even, for how hard he coached Brady and how he held Brady to the same kind of standard as he'd hold any player. And if Brady messed up, Belichick talks about that in front of the team. Hey, the quarterback didn't make the play here. There wasn't a lot of extra love thrown to Brady. I think that became a little bit of an issue late in his time in New England. I think it kind of wore him down a little bit. And even behind the scenes, when you hear about how these contract negotiations go with the Patriots, and it's a pretty, they'll lowball you, and it comes across as a hard line offer initially. From what I've heard, and I am not reporting this, but what you hear around chatter around the NFL is that approach even applied to Tom Brady over the years. So Brady got a lot, by quarterback standards, he got a lot less special treatment than most guys in his position. And it's business as usual for New England in that regard this year. Obviously, the quarterback's not going to get any special treatment this year, whoever it is.
Okay, let's go to the Jordan Love thing. Should Aaron Rodgers be outraged? And what do you think of Jordan Love?
I think Aaron Rodgers has every reason to not like this pick, and I think the Packers have every reason to say, that's fine, we knew you wouldn't like the pick, and we still expect you to be a professional and the leader of this team, because that's what you are. Now, it's easy for me to say that. We'll see how the process goes. As far as Jordan Love and what he is, and I did not watch all of his snaps at Utah State by any means. I'll watch him every snap now that he's in the NFL. What you hear about him from people within the league is there's a ton of talent, a lot to work with there in terms of raw talent, some baffling interceptions, so he's got to see the field with greater clarity and consistency, and then some of his mechanics are off, and that creates an erratic nature to his throwing. Matt LaFleur, Green Bay's head coach, he's made his bones in the NFL as a quarterback mechanics guru. He is passionate about that. He coaches that very well. He has very defined opinions on how to do that. So I'm sure the Packers are looking at that and saying, we are in a unique position to develop Jordan Love, and our head coach is probably more hands-on with the quarterback than almost any head coach in the NFL. It's just the way Green Bay is set up over there. So they think they can develop Love. I understand the reasoning of that. If I were drafting, I don't know if I would have taken the QB given where they are on the path to a Super Bowl, but that just gets into the other philosophy, Jeff. If you're close to a Super Bowl, do you draft for the here and now and go all in and try to get it this year? Or do you try to keep your sustained success going and say, we want to be close to the Super Bowl every year, and we're going to continue to look at the big picture? And different teams do it different ways. Green Bay this year looked at the big picture.
One of the sort of related is Philadelphia taking Jalen Hurts. Now, that's a little different because Carson Wentz has had injury issues, et cetera, and because it wasn't a first-round pick and all of that. But one of the things that Philly said was, we want to be a quarterback factory, like Green Bay used to. Maybe they still do, really, but they used to sort of take quarterbacks every other year, figuring you could flip them for assets if nothing else. What did you make of Philadelphia taking Jalen Hurts?
Yeah, I think that could be part of their thinking, is what you just outlined. We flip them for an asset, not unlike what happened with Jimmy Garoppolo in New England. Now, there are different stages of, in terms of where they are as a franchise and with their quarterback. New England was probably drafting Garoppolo because they were unsure if Brady would age as well as he has. Wentz is 27. He's at his prime athletically, but he's got the injury issues. The one thing that's interesting is in the other, another philosophy, Jeff, is, do you want your backup quarterback to be similar in style to your starter? Because if he's at least similar in style, you're running the same offense with him that everybody's been practicing all year and that everyone's gotten good at. Or do you want the backup quarterback to be very different than your starter? Because then if he's on the field, at least your offense now has a bunch of new dimensions that maybe your opponents have not game planned for. And that's another one where different teams see it different ways. Maybe Philly feels like their backup, they want him, have him to be different than their starting QB. I think a big reason Jalen Hurts is here, though, is they want to add to some of the gadgetry that they do, and they want to have multiple passing threats on the field. They want these Wildcat-style quarterback. It'll be interesting to see what they do, because that's a creative, innovative, offensive coaching staff that they have there.
Talking to Andy Benoit, of course, a longtime NFL analyst on Twitter, at Andy_Benoit. What did you think of the Titans draft?
I like the Titans draft. I think the first round right tackle makes a lot of sense given that Jack Conklin's gone. What'll be interesting to see is how Isaiah Wilson ready to play right away, because they need him to play right away, and he's such a large man. And that scheme, there's a black and blue running offense. There's no doubt about that. That scheme, though, the premise, it starts from a place of agility and finesse, if you will, because a zone-blocking team like the Titans, you got to have all these offensive linemen get off the snap with the same mechanics and the same tempo, and they have to be able to run and get initially quick in order to reach blockers and pin them back inside. Guys Isaiah Wilson's size, you don't typically associate with those kind of traits, but I'm sure the Titans would not have taken Wilson if they didn't think he could contribute and be effective doing that. So it'll be fascinating to see how that works out. And then Christian Fulton, the cornerback in the second round, late second round, he had some issues in man coverage at times at LSU. The Titans, though, they do so much zone coverage, and they really help their corners with the way they rotate safeties or guys underneath the corners. Fulton, to me, can fill a void because they needed a corner after losing Logan Ryan.
There were, it felt like some teams had themes drafting. The Raiders with three receivers, Ruggs, Edwards, and Bowden. The Broncos with loading up, obviously, for their young quarterback with Jerry Jeudy and K.J. Hamler, plus the tight end from Missouri. The Dolphins drafted offensive linemen in the first, second, and fourth round. It sort of suggests this whole best athlete available thing is nonsense. But what did you think? Let's just take those drafts, Raiders, Broncos, Dolphins, and sort of the themes that they struck. It felt like, at least to me.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm with you on the teams will say all the time, well, yeah, we just take the best guy available. We'll even say regardless of need, and that's just simply not true. Teams draft for need as they should draft for need most of the time. Well, every once in a while, if there's a great guy, Chase Young does not fill a need for Washington, but Chase Young's too great of a talent to pass on. So they'll do that at times, but let's look at Jerry Jeudy and the Broncos, for example. And I know, like, betonline.ag has the over-under at 900 yards for Jeudy as a rookie, and I would think he's going to be well over that because that is such a crisply defined passing game now. Cortland Sutton is a classic X receiver, meaning he's the big-bodied guy, lines up on the weak side of the formation, and he wins one-on-one outside or he runs in-breaking routes. That's kind of what your X receiver does. He's a star. He's a good player. They didn't have anybody around him, though. Jeudy is a Z receiver, the guy who goes in motion. He runs intermediate routes, a little bit of a more of expansive route tree. And then even after Jeudy, they took Hamler, the slot receiver from Penn State. He's a shifty, undersized slot receiver. So you have three wideouts that you know exactly what they are. They're very clearly defined. As an analyst, as an NFL analyst, I like you when that happens. I like teams that have clear roles, and I think when you have a young quarterback like Drew Locke, that's going to help get the offense on track a little faster. They got some blockers for Locke too in this draft, by the way. So your point, I agree with completely. The teams that have a theme and clearly they take picks that build on the value of other picks and they all correlate, to me, that's what good drafting is.
The Raiders, so if that's the question, Henry Ruggs takes the top off. That's what he does. Derek mm-hmm. Carr checks down. That's what he does. Is that a fit?
That's a great question as well. I think you could argue that either way. Derek Carr last year, 20-plus yard throws with the balls traveling that far through the air, he had significantly fewer attempts than a typical NFL quarterback. He had about two-thirds as many attempts as most QBs in that department. And that's probably not by design necessarily. Oh, the Raiders are a pretty diverse, aggressive passing offense. So for Carr, for the Ruggs pick to be worth it, Carr's going to have to be a little bit more aggressive. And I think let's take the optimistic side because it's draft time and it's easier to be positive than negative, or it's more fun anyway. Now that Carr has a speed receiver, which he has not had in recent years, not a guy like this anyway. There aren't a lot of guys like Ruggs. Now that he has that, maybe he becomes a little bit more aggressive. One thing the Raiders do really well is they have what you call flood concepts, or three route combinations where there's one route that goes deep, one goes intermediate, and one goes underneath. If that deep route is run by Henry Ruggs now, that is, as you said, taking the top off the defense, that really opens up those intermediate routes, and they have really good receivers for those intermediate routes. Darren Waller might be the best receiving tight end. We're just talking about catching passes. He might be the best in the NFL right now. And Tyrell Williams is a big-bodied number two receiver. Those guys can catch those 15 to 20-yard balls. And that, Jeff, that's really where the passing game becomes aggressive and dynamic. You're going to throw a deep ball every now and then, but that ability to work the intermediate level is what sets teams apart. Having Ruggs on the field opens up the intermediate level. And by the way, Ruggs can run some of those intermediate routes himself. He's not a one-trick pony.
So give me a couple drafts that you love and a couple that you hate.
I love Dallas's draft. Absolutely loved it. Value across the board. I think four of their five draft picks can be starters within the next couple years. C.D. Lamb, their number one pick, who I'm sure they didn't think would be available at number 17 when it was their turn to pick. He's going to make Amari Cooper better because now Lamb can play outside or in the slot, which means you can put Cooper outside or in the slot. And I think Cooper's at his best when he's in the slot. So I love the Dallas Cowboys draft. Some drafts that I had some questions about, I think you could argue Green Bay, should they have taken the long-term view or not? I think that's a fair discussion to have. Philadelphia, the Jalen Hurts one to me struck me as a little bit odd as that pick. But again, they have a plan for him. I was surprised they took him in the second round, but it's easy for me to sit here and say that.
The Jerry Jones thing's interesting because people love to mock him, and they did again this year heading up to the draft. We're like, Jerry has sent his scouts away. And when I was asked about that in another show, I said, you know what? Jerry actually, he drafts well, at least lately has. And I'm sure at that point, he'd gotten, I don't know where he sent his scouts anyway. Like, no one was with anybody, but in the end, like, he's doing a hell of a job drafting, isn't he? I mean, over the last few years anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that, because let's look, what's been Dallas's problem this offseason, or their, let's call it their challenge, because it's actually a good problem to have. They have too many star players they have to pay a bunch of money to. Byron Jones at cornerback, who's maybe he's now the highest paid corner in the league, and Miami signed him. They couldn't afford him because he became the best corner, and they had to pay Jalen Smith a big second contract. They're going to have to pay Leighton Vander Esch, or other linebacker, a big deal. They paid a ton for DeMarcus Lawrence recently. They have an expensive defense and offense. It's even more expensive. Ezekiel Elliott's a huge price at running back. Dak Prescott, his contract's the biggest story in the news right now. Their offensive line, Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, some of the highest paid guys at their position. All of those guys are guys that the Cowboys drafted themselves. So I think you're 100% spot on with that. In fact, the more you think about it, if it's star power that you value in a draft, you could argue Dallas has been the most successful drafting team, or certainly one of the three or four best, over the last 5 to 7, 5, 8 years. And that's why they're struggling now to re-sign everybody, is because they drafted so many great players.
On Twitter, once again, at Andy_Benoit, B-E-N-O-I-T. Last question, my beloved Buffalo Bills and my producer Jeffrey's beloved New York Giants, your thoughts?
Well, Buffalo, I thought, was the best coach defense in the NFL last year. They did not have a lot of needs coming into this draft, and actually really the only need they had on offense they addressed by trading for Stephon Diggs. And the Bills are telling you exactly how they see themselves in the AFC East by trading for Diggs. At the deep draft for receivers, they could have gotten a good one for a much cheaper price in Diggs, and they said, no, we're going to pay the premium. We're going to pay a first-round pick. We're going to pay him veteran contract money, because we know that we are one wide receiver away from probably being the favorites in the AFC East, and maybe even being more than that. Maybe we're Super Bowl contenders. So I like that they went in that direction for Diggs. Their defense is already great. As far as the New York Giants went, I understand why they did what they did. Dave Gettleman at GM there, he likes to invest in guys in the trenches, defensive linemen. They have a bunch already, so now it was offensive linemen. And they need a couple of new tackles. Nate Solder's expensive on the left side, has not played up to his contract, and he'll probably be gone next year. And then they already got rid of Mike Remmers, their starting right tackle for this year. So Andrew Thomas, first-round pick. Matt Peart, third-round pick. Both those guys, they plan on having long-term starters in those guys.
Andy, really appreciate you joining us. Love your stuff. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it.
The Jeff Calkins Show.
Joined now by Drew Hill. Drew Hill from the Daily Memphian on Twitter at, what's your Twitter handle, Drew?
At Drew Hill underscore DM.
At Drew Hill underscore DM. All right, so a couple things. Before I get to the Memphis Tigers, I do want to get some of your thoughts on the, let's start with the NFL draft. Tua, what do you think?
I thought it was about right. The Dolphins get their guy that they probably were looking to get from the beginning of the season when they had the whole tank for Tua campaign going. The reports from Adam Schefter and from Ian Rappaport seemed a little bit as if they were a smokescreen to try and get teams to dissuade, I guess, teams from trading up and trying to get Tua, because they thought that he might fall to them, when in reality the Dolphins wanted him from the very beginning. But I think it is a decent landing spot. They helped him out a little bit. They ended up getting Matt Breida from the 49ers, and they did some nice things in this draft. I think they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, they've obviously loaded up. They loaded up in free agency, and then they drafted three offensive linemen early as well to protect Tua. It's funny because, in Denver, young quarterback, what did they do? They went and drafted a whole bunch of receivers and tight ends, two receivers and a tight end. And what Miami did, I think, is appropriately given Tua, is they went out and got three offensive linemen very high. Who else did you love? Who else did you hate?
I thought that the Ravens had a really good draft again, and they were already very good last year. They got J.K. Dobbins, and I thought that that's a really nice pickup for them that'll fit well, because you have Lamar Jackson, you have Mark Ingram, who can pound you, and Lamar Jackson, who can run around you, and then you got J.K. Dobbins, who can sort of switch up the pace. I actually really like that pick. They also got Queen, I think, who's the linebacker.
He can fly. He can fly. They always draft.
And they
smart.
Have a good history drafting linebackers early. And then they ended up getting James Prochet, the wide receiver from SMU, really late in the draft. He fell pretty far. And I think he's a really good player. Honestly, I was hoping that my Bears would take him in the middle rounds. They ended up taking Darnell Mooney, who's another American receiver, but from Tulane, ahead of him. But I think that the Ravens did a really good job. I think the Ravens probably, in my opinion, had the best draft.
So Antonio Gibson goes third round to the Redskins. Do you know how good he'll be?
I don't know how good he'll be, but you would think that he's the type of guy that translates, right? Like, he's got the speed. We know he can break tackles. He was in a limited role, but if he continues to grow, he looks like a guy that could turn out to be a useful weapon. I think there's a reason why a lot of people were, like, saying that he was a steal, and I think it was popular to say that he's going to end up being a steal or that he's under the radar simply because there just wasn't that much tape on him, I guess. That SMU game was pretty much, I mean, he had a great season overall, but, like, in terms of dominant performances, like, that was the one that stuck out, that SMU game, and that was on national television, on the biggest stage, and he showed up. I think he'll translate. It was funny. I was texting Mark Giannotto afterwards. Obviously, he's a Redskins guy, and he was cracking me up because he was excited. He said, you know, if you had to watch this Redskins offense every year, you'd be excited that they just drafted a weapon too. So, but no, I think he'll be a guy that might have to find his footing at first, but he's definitely got the speed and to be a weapon.
I kind of don't know. Like, when I was watching D'Angelo Williams here, I was absolutely 100% convinced that D'Angelo would be a great pro, which he was. I'll be honest, I thought Daryl Henderson would be a really good pro. He did not have a great rookie year, and then the Rams just drafted Cam Akers, so it's unclear what his role is going to be going forward. With Antonio, like, he was so good when he was good. It could be one of these deals that actually you're going to look back and say, why wasn't he used more at Memphis, right? Why wasn't he deployed more? But, of course, you got Kenny Gainwell running the ball. Like, what are you going to do? Like, and so it was only sort of late in the season that he was used more and more as a running back. And now they've decided in the NFL, I think, that he is fundamentally a running back, not a receiver. So I just don't know. He's very clearly strong. He's very clearly breaks tackles, you know, and he very clearly is fast as hell. And I like the guy, and I hope he's great. But I will say I don't know one way or another. I don't have a firm conviction. I'm excited about the possibilities with Antonio. But, okay. Did you enjoy the draft fundamentally?
Oh, yeah, I thought it was awesome. I don't know if I'd go as far as other people have said it to say that it was better this way than it was, you know, with the stage and everything. I like that. Although it is a bit more sterile of an environment, it's what you picture when you picture the NFL draft. That's what you get excited about, is to, you know, see the guys walk up on stage and get the hat, and then you listen to the interview of a new guy that your team just picked, and that sort of comes with it. This was different. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was fun. There's a reason why the audience was as big as it was, because we were all really hungry for sports. But I'm not going to go as far as to say that I liked it better in this format than the previous format.
I liked it better. I think the things that were worse were, I don't miss the player interviews at all, I'll be honest. Like, those are rarely, but I miss the embedded reporters. I thought they brought insight, and we didn't have that, right? So I did miss that. I don't care about the hugging of Roger Goodell, lifting him off the ground. I actually think Roger Goodell started out really stiff and awkward. I thought in the end it was a great weekend for him. Not only were the ratings huge, but it was Roger Goodell who sort of made the decision to do this. He was the driving force behind doing this, and he was clearly right about that. And then at the end, when you had Roger Goodell slouching back in his easy chair and eating M&Ms and wearing a T-shirt, like, that was the best Roger Goodell we've ever seen. Like, you finally got a relaxed Roger Goodell. But I actually really liked looking into all of the homes of the coaches, the homes. I like the dogs. I mean, how do you beat Bill Belichick's dog sitting there on that chair? That was fantastic.
That was good. That was good. I will say, though, if we don't have this big event where everyone has to dress up, then we would have never had, in terms of the NBA, we would have never had T. Morant's hat, and we would have never had Ja Morant's pocket square of himself. Did you think about that?
No, but I also think the NBA is more of a show. Like, I think the NBA, you just switched on me and went to the NBA draft. The NFL draft doesn't have those memorable.
Murray wearing a bright pink suit last year.
Yeah, I don't think the NFL. Yeah, no. Here's where I draw the line. I think it was better, but it can only be done once like this. First of all, I don't need to see Jerry's yacht again. I've now seen the yacht, right? And so it was, as a novelty, it was better, but it was only better that one time, and now we're going to go back to normal drafts, and that's fine. It'll be in Cleveland next year, Eric Hasseltine's favorite city, and then it'll be in Las Vegas after that, and it'll be fun. So I thought it was fabulous. Okay, onward to the Memphis Tigers. Two bits of news over the weekend. First, Tyler Harris to Iowa State. What do you think?
I think it makes sense. It was a school that recruited him before. It's a school that, has recruited plenty of local prospects. It all made a ton of sense to me. I wish him well. I hope he fits in there. To be honest, I'm not like an expert when it comes to Iowa State basketball, so yeah. I don't know exactly what his fit will be. But I do hope that he gets what he sort of sought out to be, which is some more minutes and maybe a bigger scoring role.
Actually, there were three bits of news because the Precious Achiuwa thing happened since we last were on the air as well. It was funny because, and God bless people. I appreciate the spirit of optimism as well and wishing for good things for your program. But there were people out there saying over and over, he hasn't declared yet. He hasn't declared yet. He's coming back. It was stupid. Isn't this just how Precious is wired? It's just he didn't want to make a big announcement.
Right. I think initially, what I had been told initially was that there would probably not even be an announcement, that just the last day that he had to do it, he would declare for the NBA draft, put in the paperwork, and then he wouldn't even say anything about it. He would just put in the paperwork and go do it. Because he's not much of a social media guy. He does get on there occasionally, but he doesn't need that sort of stuff. And so, but then as the week sort of went along, you had more and more people, tweeting at him and asking him, despite all of the media in town saying
100%.
That he's gone.
We were all saying, stop it, he's gone, yeah.
Right, but you can't help it because, that's what fans do. They're wishful for the best, and I don't blame them one bit. But, there were lots of people sort of bothering him. So then the rumor was that it was actually going to be earlier in the week, that he was just going to finally do it. But then that was held up a little bit because he had to talk to Penny and let Penny know that he was going to do it and let other people know he was going to do it. And then, by the time it all came around, when the announcement was made, I'm pretty sure he was doing training, to get himself ready for the next level. And so he didn't even – this is pure Precious Achiuwa right here. He didn't even know that it was out there for, a few hours.
So then who put it – how did it get –
somebody had reported that he was doing that.
How did it then get out there?
Because they had talked about it beforehand. He did the interview with ESPN, and they were putting it out at a
– He just didn't know when they were putting it out.
Right. He just was like, it's not a big deal if I hold my announcement. Well – he held it, and then I don't think ESPN held theirs, and so he ended up just not even knowing that it had been reported that he had declared for, several hours, which is just, pure Precious. He doesn't really care about the attention, which is, I think that's a big plus. He's a great teammate.
He's a great teammate. Big plus for him going forward. Okay. And then we had some excitement over Landers Nolly yesterday. You talked to his dad?
Yeah, what a day yesterday was.
What happened?
A bit peculiar. Well, earlier in the day, I talked to his dad about the decision to put his name in and test the NBA waters. And his dad sort of pointed out that that had been the plan for a long time, and that that's what they were going to do. If there was going to be a combine, he was going to go through the combine, and they thought he would get an invitation based off of the way he played. But without all that, the circumstances are a little bit different. And I think over the course of the day, there was they realized that there were probably a few hang-ups in the process of, you know, declaring and all this. And so it just made more sense just not even go through it and just decide to withhold or to, I guess, maintain their commitment to Memphis for the time being. Now, do I think that if he's not eligible to play next year that he'll be playing for Memphis? I don't think so, because, you know, he's already had to sit out a year of college, and to sit out 2 years of college, it just seems like kind of a waste at this point.
So you think,
especially a kid that could play on a professional level somewhere.
So you think if the NCAA doesn't change their rules to allow players to play immediately, one-time waiver, then he will not sit around waiting for a year. He will go play somewhere. But at that point, because he hasn't put his name into the draft, it can't be the NBA, right?
I mean, it can be the G League.
He could go to the G League.
He could go play in which is technically the NBA. But, I mean, there are several different professional routes to take. But, like, let's just be honest. If you put yourself in Landers Nolly's situation, you wouldn't want to sit out another year either. You know, you've already done that. You've been through that once. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to do that. So, now I'm not saying it's definite that he wouldn't sit out and come back to Memphis, but I'm just saying, you know, that at the moment, from what I've heard from the family and from Memphis, seems like the likely scenario. If he's not eligible to play, I don't think we'll ever see him in a Memphis uniform.
There were, in terms of whether the NCAA will ultimately change its decisions and have transfers allowed to play immediately, there were conflicting reports over the weekend about what the NCAA is going to do. Can you take me through who's saying what?
Well, I'm not much for the media beef type, but
not beef. Just report. You don't have to take a side. What's happening?
It was a heated exchange. I believe John Rothstein put something out there from a release that the NCAA had put out that said that they might be pushing the vote back to January, and this rule wouldn't take place until next year, potentially. Then Jeff Goodman had talked to some athletic directors, and he reported that they're still going to go through with this vote and it's still going to happen on time. And I think the general perspective on this, and when you talk to college coaches, is that they still believe that it's going to be in May.
That the vote is going to be in May, or that the vote is going to be in favor of change?
That it'll be in May and that it will be in favor of change.
It's a little tense, though, isn't it?
I mean, it's just typical, though, that the NCAA can't provide clarity here. It's so typical, is it not?
Yeah, I guess so. All right, and then in final bit of news, rough news out of Tulane. Tershawn Hightower, leading scorer last year, charged with murder. What in the world?
Yeah, that's the wrong kind of first 48 right there.
He had put his name in the draft, but only to be whatever.
Yeah,
and then he was dismissed from Tulane.
Right. And the guy, obviously innocent until proven guilty, so I don't want to cast any judgment here. But, that's concerning. It's obviously not a good look for Tulane and
okay.
Ron Hunter, who's trying to put a program together.
Talking to Drew Hill from the Daily Memphian. He is a sports writer, but he's also a business writer, and has been doing a whole variety of entertaining stories over at the Daily Memphian. This time on a security system slash TV? What's
Home Innovations.
What's it called?
Home Innovations. That's the name of
the company. Yeah. Okay. And what does Home Innovations do?
It's actually Gaddis Home Innovations. But, yeah, it's a guy named George Gaddis. You probably know him from recognize the Gaddis name from Fred P. Gaddis, company that used to be based out of Memphis. He was working in the Medicare industry, and he was selling, like, specific items, like parts of spine and things. And he was really successful doing that and just decided a little over 2 years ago that he was just going to stop because it wasn't fruitful to him anymore. He didn't feel like they were helping the patients because the prices were going up, and he wanted to do something else. And he had been doing these home innovations on the side. And when I say home innovations, that can be like home security cameras, doorbell security cameras, entertainment systems, you know, audio systems, all that kind of stuff. And he had just bought a truck in January to, you know, just sort of help himself get this thing off the ground. He had been successful for a little while, but he felt comfortable enough to buy the truck. And then when all this hit, he figured, oh man, like, I'm totally screwed. No one's going to let me into their house anymore. But it's actually been the exact opposite. Because what he's learned is that people are desperate. And the story, and sort of the hook on the story, is he gets set up by John McLaughlin, former Memphis Tiger, and he wants George to go help with his neighbor's internet and television, because the internet television was out at his neighbor's house, and it was a fixed income family and an 85-year-old woman that lived in the house. And so, of course, he was nervous about going into this house because, you know, right, with all the stuff going on and her age, you just want to be really careful. So he says, and I knock on the door, I take a few steps backwards, and then she comes to the door and he says, are you sure? Like, are you sure you want me to come in and fix your television and internet? And she said, she looked at me right in the eye and she said, honey, I'd rather die than be cooped up in here with no internet or television. And ain't that the truth? It just tells the story of all of us.
That's
what would we do without television
exactly.
and internet these
yeah,
days?
Absolutely. Drew, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Yep, thanks anytime.
Thanks
and
much.
If you have business stories, email me.
Oh, tell people where to email you.
dhill@dailymemphian.com.
dhill@dailymemphian.com. Oh, you also did a story on Eclectic Eye, right?
I did. That was a more of an emotional story about how small businesses are coping with the...
And what the owner has been through, just like
the
highs and lows are going through this. Anyway, you can read all this at the Daily Memphian. Thanks very much, Drew. Appreciate it.
Don't miss the Jeff Calkins Show tomorrow at 9 a.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN.